Coming up, are you computing while you're watching TV? Then an app called Miso might be the right app for you. Plus, Obama's on Pinterest, all tops on iPad, and Snap Guide for how-tos. All that, and is rap rad or fad? No, not that kind of rap. On the Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 54 recorded Monday, April 2nd, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Social Hour in Petaluma, California on a pretty nice Monday morning. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And it is a beautiful morning here. Not super warm, a little bit crisp, but the sun is shining. And hey, that's all I ask for, Sarah.
I agree. We had a very rainy week last week in the Bay Area. In fact, I think Leo tweeted out some stat that it was the rainiest March in the last 80 years. So it tells you a little bit something, but it seems to be turning around a little bit. So I, for one, am relieved. So we have a very interesting guest, and it's actually a perfect timing today because two of my very favorite shows are starting up after rather long hiatus. So let's go ahead and introduce him, Shamrat Niyogi, the CEO of Miso.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. For anybody who's unfamiliar with the general functionality of Miso, how do you describe yourselves?
So we are a second screen app. So as you watch TV, people can use Miso to share what they watch with their friends, connect with others, and get interactive content related to the programming. So as you're watching your favorite TV show, you can get polls, questions, trivia, product information, fun facts as you're watching a show. And we call these experiences sideshows. So, you know, historically people have, we started in the Foursquare for TV space where people check in, get rewards, and now you can get more interactive content as you're watching your favorite TV shows.
Who are the people who are providing, let's say, the trivia questions, all of the data that's on the second screen while you're watching a show that you like?
So we've created this open publishing platform, very similar to how you can create a WordPress blog where anyone can author and produce a second screen experience. So a super fan, a television network, a production company. So we've actually made these open tools that make it easy for anybody to produce this content. So we have networks like USA Network, Showtime, Comedy Central, Fox, using our tools to author and produce these experiences. But we also have super fans who just are really, really into a TV show wanting to author and produce these experiences. So we make it available for everybody.
Can you talk to us a little bit in terms of the statistics of how many people are watching TV while using that second screen and relying on conversation that's happening in the social space while keeping their attention on the television?
Sure. So, you know, we founded our company about 2 years ago based off of seeing the trends that the entire market is sort of seeing. So, you know, Nielsen has stats in the United States that basically say that 60% of TV viewers are using some sort of second screen device while they're watching TV. They're on their laptops, they're on their mobile device. And this stat actually existed prior to the tablet being even launched. And so there's a trend of that every single year, there's a 35% increase year over year of people using another device while they're watching TV. And this actually poses an opportunity. If you look at television today, the way you create content is for one screen. And now, if you look at the way people are watching TV today, there's another screen in front of them. And we saw this when we founded our company as an opportunity. You know, can we build something that TV is based off of sort of a simple premise. You sit, you stare, you sell ads. It's a $74 billion business centered around attention. But attention is now being diverted from the TV to a second screen. So we ask, can we build something that can recapture someone's attention while they watch TV? Can we build something that adds value to your TV watching experience? Can we make it more social? Can we make it more fun? And we believed if we could do that effectively, if we could build something that people want to use as they watch TV, in the same way TV advertisers buy ads on TV, they'll buy ads in the second screen. And so we built this publishing platform for people to author and produce the second screen content. You're sort of seeing some examples of quotes and trivia, guest star information, people answering questions. You can see that as you're watching a show like Mad Men, if there's a Chrysler ad on TV, you can see on the second screen a Chrysler ad as well, that can be more interactive in nature.
When I first became familiar with Miso, I thought, okay, so it's at least the same type of concept as an app I've used in the past called Get Glue, or another app I'm familiar with called Into Now. It sounds, though, as if you want to move a little bit away from that feeling of location-based checking into shows and more, here is some additional material based on a show you just already really like.
Yeah, I mean, I think, if you look at 2 years ago, we had this vision of a world where you come home and you turn on the TV and the mobile device knows what's on. So you're watching Mad Men and, I'm 15 minutes into the TV show, Mad Men. I just watched it last. I don't know if you're Mad Men fans.
Yes, but, absolutely.
You turn on the TV show and immediately I get a push notification on my phone saying you're watching Mad Men. I think it was called The Last Kiss or something in like part one. Do you want to share this with your friends? You click on share. Immediately you're immersed into this experience that's directly connected to what's happening on TV. So on TV, they were talking about Mohawk Airlines, and if I look down at the second screen and I get information about Mohawk Airlines was actually an airline and get all this trivia. So we believed in this experience that was very connected to what's happening on TV. And so when we started our company, we were bootstrapped. We didn't have any funding at the time. We said, well, how do we know what someone's watching? So we asked, well, the simplest way is to just ask people, what are you watching? So we were the first to sort of pioneer this idea of checking into a TV show, getting rewards and badges. But that was really not our vision of our company. Our vision of our company was to build products and services that improve the way you experience a TV show, that adds value to the entire show from start to finish. And so checking in was just sort of the starting, was sort of the first step. We've evolved that thinking to providing more interactive features. And, if you open up Miso on the iPhone today, you search Game of Thrones or you search, Mad Men, the last three episodes, you'll see all this interactive content that exists that you can tune into when you watch a TV show.
I'm curious how you scale your business, because I can imagine that working with a lot of these different broadcasters, it's pretty labor intensive as far as getting the partnership together and offering up different things through the application. So how do you see your business growing and being able to maintain what type of demand some of these broadcasters are expecting?
So yeah, we work with, over 30 plus television networks. We actually work with the operators like DirecTV and AT&T Universe, and you're correct. There is a lot of time and energy that's required from Miso to ensure their success. From our perspective, we see that there's a lot of value. One is, they have real estate on TV to drive awareness and distribution. They have Facebook fans. They have Twitter fans. So when we work with a specific partner, let's give an example, USA Network, where we work closely with USA Network to create sideshows, which are these interactive experiences on a second screen for shows like Psych and In Plain Sight and Fairly Legal. They drive a lot of awareness and distribution to our platform. They promote to their Facebook fans, hey, tune into this interactive experience. They promote on air. They promote on Twitter. So while it does require a bit amount of time, there's a lot of value that's being received back, which is a lot of awareness and distribution, which is a key part of our focus over the next year and a half. Is one is, how do we get more interactive content created via our platform? So given our web-based publishing tools, how do we get more networks and superfans to sort of author and produce second screen experiences? But the second is how do we get as many eyeballs as possible to those experiences, whether it's via our iPhone or whether it's iPad or whether it's via our web, which we're making some significant updates to. Working with the networks, while it's a degree of time, but there's a lot of upside given the distribution that they have.
You mentioned that you can check into a show or somehow participate in the second screen experience of a show and get points. What are those points all about, and what can I buy with enough points?
So, you know, we started as when we started with the rewards aspect of our platform, where you get check-ins and get rewards, you know, it was just used as an experiment, to be honest. Like, we actually weren't really sure whether those points would translate anything to anything sort of meaningful in the physical world. We just wanted to encourage people to make the second screen experience more fun. So right now, the points don't actually translate to anything like physical rewards or getting Starbucks cards or anything like that. While we can do that fairly easily because we have the tracking mechanisms already in place. You know, our goal is that we feel like the second screen is all about content. You know, TV itself is all about an entertaining content experience where there's a beginning, a middle, and end. You know, when you watch Game of Thrones or Mad Men or my wife is watching New Girl. And we feel like the second screen has a content experience that's just as interactive, that's just as valuable in the long run. Now, what is that second screen content that people want to tune into? You know, it's still debatable about what kind of content that's there that actually improves the show overall. You know, we actually think that the content's going to be the more important part than the actual points for rewards. But, you know, it's still very early in the market. We're all learning. There are several companies in the space that are trying various different methods, but we believe content's going to be king at the end of the day.
Just out of curiosity, I was recently at an event that was talking about the future of television, and there was an executive from Fox there who was discussing how they're building some of their own apps. I know Celebrity Apprentice, for example, just came out with their own app. So how do you continue to be competitive when some of the broadcasters are, in fact, creating their own apps that are specific to their own programs?
So I think that's a really good question. I mean, I think the number one thing that we ask ourselves is what does the viewer want? And, you know, what do you guys want when you watch a TV show? And when we talk to users, when we talk to just anybody for that matter, people don't want to download an app for every single TV show. It's too time consuming. It's too much effort. Getting your friends together and sort of socialize on a specific, show it takes a lot of work. And so this reminds me of like the early days of Facebook. And if you think about the early days of Facebook, every single television show created a Facebook app. You know, everybody did it. But then Facebook created fan pages, and they made it easier for people, for networks to sort of aggregate and to connect with their fans in more meaningful ways through these tools, and they provided insights into how people are engaging with their pages. So we're going to see the shift from the network sort of creating their own apps to because it's just not right for the viewers. You know, if you think about the 30,000 hours of programming that's on TV, think about the 100-plus networks that are there, it just doesn't scale to create an app for every single TV show. One, it's very expensive for them to do. So we've created these tools that allow the networks to scale the amount of second screen content that they're creating for their shows and making it really easy for people to access that through the Miso app and our browser. Now, what we are going to be doing is we're going to provide means for having these experiences live outside of Miso as well. But that's going to be coming towards later this year.
I've just got one more general question for you, Shamrat. And we've got a live chat room going on during our show. And I always keep a lookout for some good questions that come to mind as they're watching these interviews. And it seems like there are a few people who say, but if I'm just watching a show, you know, I've got to have my eyes on the screen, and if I look down too much, then I'm not really paying as much attention. And how am I going to share that with a friend? It seems to me that, and I understand the idea of kind of already looking at my iPad anyway while I'm watching TV because I've just gotten used to doing that. It might as well be related to the content I'm watching. But it seems like there are certain programs like the Oscars, the Super Bowl, something that, some sort of presidential debate that you know maybe more people than usual will all be watching so that there's a bit of a common thread going on, you know, rather than just every show that you might want to watch at any given time over the course of a year. Certain shows make more sense. Am I right?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I mean, we have a belief that there is an interactive content experience that will exist for all programming, but not all programming is considered equal. You know, some programming has a more lean forward experience. You look at reality shows, you look at, you know, sports, you look at shows where there's natural downtime within a given episode. You know, for a lot of scripted shows, you know, maybe you don't want to access that content right at the moment the show is airing or during, but there's always natural points within the show where there's downtime and you want to look at something, or you've ever watched a drama show and you're like, who's that guest star? You know, so we actually believe that there is an interactive content experience that exists for all 30,000 hours of programming across television. But every show is different. And this is why we built a web-based, why we built an open publishing platform. So we can allow different experiences to emerge for different types of shows, because a one-size-fits-all strategy just doesn't work for the second screen. And so you are correct. You know, there's not all shows are created equal, and it's not like every single show you want to be staring at a second screen device. But we believe that there is, for certain types of shows, there could be ways to improve that show through storytelling, through ancillary content, through engagement, through a reality show. But, you know, we're still trying to figure that out. We're trying to provide the research to the larger market, so the people that are actually producing these shows, the production companies, the networks, actually know how to use the screen to create a compelling experience for their shows that don't take them away from the show, but actually improve the show overall.
I just have one more question, and this has all been really fascinating. Clearly, this is the future of television. This has nothing to do with social TV, but I was reading your bio, and I noticed that you're very talented in any specific sport. Table tennis, you're a champ, I hear.
You know, funny story about me. I actually lived in Saudi Arabia for 5 years. My dad worked in the oil business, and when I lived in Saudi Arabia, there's nothing to do. I was born in Chicago, and lived in Saudi Arabia, where there's literally nothing to do. So I picked up all these sports. And so, you know, I played tennis, I played racquetball, I played squash, I played badminton. So I got really good at playing random sports. When you have desert all around you and there's nothing to do, you pick up the end of sports. So table tennis is something that I pick up on. I also play badminton, which is sort of a weird, obscure sport here in the U.S. But if anybody wants to play some badminton in San Francisco, I'm game.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Really fun, actually. Amber, I think I'm done with my questions. Are you? I love, Shamrat, I love the way you're very honestly saying, listen, we have a model that we're still kind of fleshing out and trying to prove at this point. And, you know, the model's not set in stone. We just want people to be able to get additional material about the shows that they love. And whatever they want, we can provide them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just to close this off, you know, the TV advertising business is a big business. It's a $74 billion business. And the fear among the networks and the production companies, the people that are driving this large advertising economy, is that they're seeing the stats that advertisers are seeing, which is that people are not just staring at their television shows anymore. So what I would say is that what we're going to see, the way shows get created 3-5 years from now, is going to fundamentally going to change from a one-screen world to a two-screen world. So the way you experience Mad Men is not going to be the way you experience Mad Men, you know, 3 years from now, or the way you experience, you know, Celebrity Apprentice. These other screens will be part of the television show. So think about what that means to the business. And that's what the networks are trying to do. And we're trying to help them by understanding what content can be created, how to scale that for all types of shows that they have. And ultimately, we believe this is going to happen. And we feel like we're going to be the platform that's going to power that two-screen economy.
Love it. Well, thank you so much. I know you are super busy. Lots going on. So we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today and talk more about it. And hopefully you'll come back on in the next few months, because this is not going to be going away anytime soon.
Well, thank you for having me. And it was a pleasure, and I'm always interested in coming back and sharing new developments with Miso, as well as the entire space overall.
Awesome. And a little table tennis and badminton next time.
Absolutely.
Next time I'm feeling brave.
Anytime.
All right. Shamrat Neogi, the CEO of Miso. Go to gomiso.com to learn a lot more about how his business works. It's fascinating stuff. Thank you so much, Shamrat. All right, Amber. You know, it's fun to talk about this sort of thing, because it seems to really rile certain people up. Because you've got on one side some of our social hour viewers saying, "I just want to watch TV." My gosh, I mean, how much can you possibly share with your friends that you're watching this show? You just want to sit quietly and watch. That's what TV is. It's a passive thing. Well, it has been historically, and of course, you could continue to do that. But I think many of us realize that there are certain shows that you just want to talk about with people. I mean, for me right now, it's Mad Men, and as of last night, Game of Thrones season 2 started. And there is a geeky aspect to kind of obsessing over a certain scene, or what do they mean by that? And I would love to talk about it in person to as many people as possible, but that's just not the way that I interact with a large group of my friends on a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, I could take it to Twitter, but if I'm going through a service like Miso, I'm much more, I'm sharing with an audience that's much more likely to be interested in the conversation, you know, rather than half of my friends on Twitter say, I don't know, I don't watch that show. I don't really care what you're talking about.
No, I think you're exactly right. And let's not forget, there's still a lot of people who are watching television, who are not using a DVR, for example, who are just watching and there are commercials, right? So there's that downtime, kind of the perfect time. I know anytime if I'm watching a live show and a commercial comes on for a couple of minutes, the first thing I do is grab my iPad or my computer and I start searching about the show on Twitter or other social media sites. So I think that, you know, they seem like they have a really, Miso has a really great app out there. And I love the idea that it's kind of giving new life to television. I mean, there were discussions 5 years ago, Sarah, you probably remember this 10 years ago, about how the internet is going to kill television. And it still thrive and just many people innovate.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you. So that's Miso. Again, gomiso.com. And my first reaction was, it's different than Get Glue. How? It's different than, you know, the Miso is not the only company that's trying to figure this out. They do have, I think, a unique approach. They're making deals with a lot of the production houses. With HBO, for example, they have a Game of Thrones deal right now where if you put together a, it's called a sideshow challenge, you can possibly win. It's like a Game of Thrones hoodie that says House Stark on it. I would love that. I mean, that's a sort of like fun incentive just to be on the network, to be on the Miso network. That I like that idea. So go Miso, and it's just I love TV. So this sort of thing is fun for me because I'm one of those obsessed TV people. Okay, quickly, let's remind people that we record the Social Hour live on Mondays. It's usually about when I'm halfway awake after a very long weekend, we record the show. No, I'm just kidding. I had my coffee many hours ago. Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. But if you ever miss a show live or you want to go back to any of our former shows, we've had a lot of great guests lately. You might have missed them or want to watch it again or just get some links to any of the things that we talk about in every show, twit.tv/TSH is our website. It is our show mothership. All of our past shows and episodes are here. If you click into any particular episode, you get all the links of everything we talked about, plus a nice embedded video page. Ooh, yeah, look, that's us draping from last week. Speaking of TV, in honor of Don Draper and Mad Men coming back, we draped on the show, plus all the links that we talked about. And we talked about a lot of cool stuff there. And sometimes we only talk about it for about a minute on the show, but it's absolutely worth a little of your time to do some homework a little bit later on, social stuff. So thanks to everybody who watches us live. But remember, you don't have to. You can always subscribe to the show. That's probably the easiest way because then it's just downloaded and you can watch on your iPad or your computer or when you're on the go, you can listen to our audio feed. I mean, you have all sorts of options as far as keeping up with us. Apple TV. I mean, hey, that would be great. And we're even on Roku. We have our own app on Roku. And it's all updated and works really well. So if you've got a Roku box, you should definitely make sure that you have the Twit app because it is fun. You can also email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, Amber, we should take a moment to thank a very important company that helps us put together the Social Hour, this one in particular, and that company is Audible. Yes, audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is a fantastic URL because it's going to help you download a free audiobook of your choice. All right, so what am I talking about? Let's start at the beginning. Audible is the largest collection of audiobooks and even some periodicals too, you know, kind of if you want your newspapers read to you, that you could possibly find online. We've got novels, we've got nonfiction, biographies, autobiographies. The whole idea behind audiobooks is, hey, we all love to read, and most of us probably wish we had a lot more time to read. Reading a book, you know, anything longer than a blog post here and there sometimes can be very challenging for me. I want to read. I just don't have enough time to keep up on everything. You know, I hear about a bestseller and I'd like to get to it, but it just gets added to the list. What's nice about Audible is you can listen to a book. Someone's reading the book to you. They've got a lot of different narrators. Sometimes they have multiple narrators who do different voices. It really, really varies depending on the book that you choose. And you can listen while you're making dinner, while you're commuting to and from work, while you're at the gym. Maybe you're just taking a walk. You're walking your dog. I mean, the possibilities are endless because, of course, sitting down and reading a book requires 100% of your attention. But an audiobook, while you still have to be paying attention, you can be doing other things at the same time. So that's why Audible is so cool. The concept of audiobooks is great for busy people. It's just awesome. But Audible itself has, they've got the collection. They have a huge collection. I defy you to find an awesome book that Audible does not have. So audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is the URL to use. You go ahead and sign up, give it a whirl. Download a free book, any book you like. Just go nuts. Get creative. Listen to it, and then of course, if you love the experience, and I believe that you will, you can figure out how to become an Audible subscriber for life. So we thank them again for sponsoring this episode of the Social Hour, and that URL once again is audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. All right, Amber, let's get into some newsworthy news of the social world over the last week. Turns out that pretty much everybody's on Pinterest these days.
Except for us, Sarah.
Yeah, except for
us. We're really not very active on Pinterest. And it's funny because you're right. It seems like everybody has flocked towards the hottest social network out there, including politicians. I recently read a story about Mitt Romney's wife who is on Pinterest. And looks like President Barack Obama has jumped on Pinterest and is posting some interesting stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one would have to assume that he's got a team running the Pinterest account as the Barack Obama's Twitter account is. The White House has a Flickr account, for example. They're on Facebook. I mean, I would certainly be surprised if Mr. Obama himself was logging into Pinterest on a daily basis and pinning things. That said, there are some cool there are some cool items here. I mean, some of it is his campaign. I mean, they've got stuff for sale, and Pinterest is just a really nice way to display this. I mean, some of it is statistics about the way the U.S. economy is going, that sort of thing. Clearly, there's an agenda here. So I'm not sure if Republicans would get as much out of the Barack Obama Pinterest account as Democrats would, for example. But I really I love how this is precedent setting. And I do think that President Obama has, you know, he's been lucky enough to be in the time where it makes sense for the president to have accounts like this. But he's really been the first to be visible in this way for a lot of people. And Pinterest is absolutely huge. Amber, you and I joke that we're not on it enough, but I won't deny that it is a really big deal right now. It's got a lot of buzz and so many people are using it.
Yeah, you know, it's really fun to see the interesting ways that people use it. However, I would argue, and even with some of the pictures that you're showing right now, Sarah, that oftentimes it's all about baking. It seems like cookies and cakes and stuff always rises to the top of Pinterest. Maybe it's just me because it's so colorful. People want to share it. But every page that is full of content, there's always pies and things, especially with politicians.
Yeah, indeed. You're right. I didn't really think about that until just now. He can't stay away from the homemakery spin on Pinterest, I guess. So yeah, that's the Obama Pinterest account. Nobody can stay off Pinterest, apparently. It's that good.
For us. I know, it's so funny. I really feel like I should use it. And I often think, you know, every week, the weeks go by and I think, okay, I should really jump on there and start doing something, but I haven't thought of the best idea. So maybe if people are listening in right now and they have a good idea or something, Sarah and I should start on Pinterest, you could let us know because we need inspiration, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, Luke88Addis, I hope I'm saying your name right, in chat says, I love Pinterest. I get a good deal of traffic to my website every day from Pinterest. That is quite an incentive. Yeah, I think that if you're using it as a promotional tool or some sort of like a sliver of what you have more of on your website, or you're selling things, you're making things, and I mean, there are so many different ways that you can use a Pinterest account that's more than just, oh, I like this picture, I like these shoes, I think this looks like a nice recipe. All those are fine ways to use it as well, but I think sometimes maybe, Amber, we need to remember that there are people who are trying to get as many page views as possible on their blog, and if Pinterest helps, then why wouldn't you use it?
Yeah, exactly. All right. So this next story, I'm really excited that you added this to the list, because I just downloaded this app last week, and I do a show called App Central. It's a TV show here in Canada. And my co-host and I were actually arguing about different camera apps. We're having kind of a camera app showdown. And I said that this is one of the best new camera apps that I have seen in a while.
Yeah, it's called Camera Awesome. And I'm trying to find it. Oh, no, here it is on my iPad. Camera Awesome is, Leo and I have talked about it on iPad today, and we even talked about it a little bit last week, because they had added Instagram functionality. They're not technically using the Instagram API. Well, they are technically using the API, but it's not a full partnership the way that Instagram has a partnership with Hipstamatic. That's a different conversation. But they have added support so that if I take a picture on Camera Awesome, which I can do on my iPad right now, and I want to go ahead and send it somewhere, I can, here we go. I can go ahead and, sorry, this is on the side. I can go ahead and send to a few different places. We got SmugMug, Twitter, Picasa, PhotoBucket, Instagram, cool. And then it'll dump me into the Instagram app, where I can add other filters. It's as if I took a picture with an Instagram and brought it in. What's nice about Camera Awesome is that's the worst picture in the world that I just took. But Camera Awesome has a million different filters. In fact, I'll just go back and show you quickly. Yes, I'm sure. Let's go back to Camera Awesome here. That can really, make a picture so much better than the way that it started. You've got options even for taking the picture itself, but then once you have a picture that you like, then you've got all of these options to edit photo. You've got little presets here that are awesome, plus filters that are give you a little bit more overall control. Some of these filters, the app is completely free. Some of these filters are bundled into the free app. Some of them are in-app purchases. If you kind of get sick of the default ones that they give you, you've got some textures, you've got frame options. This app is very similar, in my opinion, to Camera Plus, which has been around longer. But it seems like, wow, this is almost exactly the same app. But once you play around with it a little bit, it does have different functionality. And it's really nice that it sends pictures to Instagram, especially because Instagram is a really big deal. And they have many millions of users. And it's nice to be part of that, but not always feel like you have to stay within the Instagram interface in order to have nice pictures.
I'm just amazed with the little awesomeize button, how quickly you can make a picture look that much better. I took a picture of one of our crew members, and he was standing in the dark. A studio is fairly well lit, and he was standing to the side, and I literally clicked on the awesomeize button to improve the photo and just kind of dragged that slider across to brighten it up, and it looked so much better. So I think even just that, that one little feature that they have there, to me, just the awesomeize button will appeal to a lot of people.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. In fact, let me do this so that you guys get the idea. So this is a picture that I took last week. It's just a silly picture of a mug I have at my house. And I had decided to awesomize it. This is the original photo. Not a bad photo. It's kind of shadowy, but you lose a little of the details. And if I went ahead and hit awesomize here, you can see you can clean it up quite a bit. Now, if I said, well, that's a little dramatic, I don't feel like that's realistic enough if I was going for something realistic. As you can see, that slider, you have a lot of control over how much you want to, add the awesome filter to any photo. And when you say done, you go ahead and save it. And they have kind of cute little terms for what they're doing when they're saving. They're boiling fairy dust. They're toasting zombie flesh. Well, isn't that nice? Stirring magic mushrooms. I mean, they got a sense of humor, so you got to love them for that. These are actually the folks behind SmugMug itself built Camera Awesome, so they're camera people. They know what we want.
You made a really good point, because many of the little sayings that they have, and even some of the filters, they have a great sense of humor. I can't remember random things, maybe from like Harry Potter, and you'll see little, as it's rendering out, you'll see these quirky little sayings. So it's fun just to kind of dive in and explore the app and some of the commentary too.
I agree. So Amber, I've got a little bit of bad news. Yahoo Meme is shutting down.
Oh boy, I'm
now,
sad.
I can tell what you're thinking. You're thinking, what's that again? Yahoo Meme?
All right, Sarah. I have no idea. I'm sure that way back whenever it launched, I looked at it, but I haven't really followed it. But you do have an account, right?
Yeah, I do. So when I worked back at Current TV, I was doing little online videos to show off new products and, you know, kind of giving them reviews. Yahoo Meme came across my desk, and I went ahead and put together an account where you can embed videos and photos and links, or just add, you know, some text. You can quote somebody else, that sort of thing. Oh, God, look at me with darker hair. But my initial reaction was, well, this is nice, except that Tumblr has already been doing this for like 5 years. So what exactly is Yahoo Meme giving me that Tumblr isn't, since I'm already a Tumblr user? And my conclusion was nothing. So the meme that you saw there was something that I put together some years ago and just never went back to, because I didn't really understand why I needed another microbloggy type of service. But it was Yahoo, Yahoo's experiment to try to replicate something that was obviously working very well for Tumblr, and even Posturus and other services like that. Just sounds like it wasn't catching on, even though Yahoo, and again, this is a few years ago, so Yahoo is having some problems that it wasn't even at this level a few years ago. So they weren't necessarily going to put out a product that people would go, ah, it's never going to work. They had a big user base and just couldn't get anybody on board. Not enough people.
Not enough people. Sad. RIP, Sarah. We need a whole show just dedicated to things that are going away. But as much, I suppose. now, Sarah, Guy Kawasaki emailed us. I got the email as well about the All Top 4 iPad app that is now available. I haven't downloaded it yet, but I will say, just from searching through some of the images on iTunes, that it looks really slick. I mean, we all know that All Top has a lot of content. So if you're looking for quirky stories and things maybe you haven't seen elsewhere, it's a great place to go.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're interested in digital photography, for example, and this is again one of Guy's companies, and it creates almost like little buckets of information based on similar topics. I used to use this for This Week in Fun all the time. If anyone remembers my show I used to do with Martin Sargent, we were always looking for weird, bizarre internet stories. And sometimes if you just sit down at a blank slate in front of your computer and try to find weird stuff, I mean, you'll find them, but it's like needle through haystack type of a thing, because the internet is just too big. So I used to look at, oh gosh, I don't even remember the name of it now. It was called, like, you know, Wacky Weird or something on All Top. It was a section where I could search for weird stories, and I found so much through All Top. So I've loved it for years. But this is digital photography, and these are a variety of sources of information, articles that it's pulling in, which looks really nice on the iPad. Obviously, you get a little snippet here. If I want to read the rest of this, I can go ahead and it'll go ahead and launch a browser view for the full story. This is all about tips for photographing kids, which is very important because kids move around a lot, and, you know, sometimes they can be challenging to photograph. Amber, you know all about this. And it's really, this is great. If I want to share from here, I can go ahead and post on Twitter, Facebook. So this is, again, not a new service, because AllTop has been around for quite some time, but the iPad app is new. And it's really nice to look at, and I've thought more and more lately that when I want to browse and just kind of get into read mode, again, this is when I actually have time to read, I really like interfaces on tablets, because you've got less to hold. I'm not really typing anything, or if I am typing, it's something very simple like a tweet if I want to share some sort of digital photography tip with you online. And then it's completely free as well. And it's what you make it. You can have your favorites, certain sections. If you're not into photography at all, but you're extremely into science, those might be little areas that you'd want to bookmark. So it just lets you kind of focus your reading, based on what you're interested in.
Love it. All right. Speaking of focusing things, we have our social tip now. And this one is really cool, especially if you're like me. And I have to admit, Sarah, I don't know about you, but I'm really not that great at keeping my contacts in order within my Gmail account. So I don't go in like my brother, who is very meticulous about this and updates everyone's information and always has their latest phone numbers and addresses and anything he could possibly ever need. Mine does not look like this. So I'm happy to see a tool that I discovered online on Lifehacker called WriteThat.name. Right now, it just works with Gmail, but they do have a beta for beta testing for Outlook. And it allows you to use this tool, and it automatically updates your address book. So anytime you get an email, and a person who's sending the email has their signature, their full signature, it pulls that information into your contact information within your Gmail contacts. So it happens, again, totally automatically. It will even update the address if the address or phone number, any information has changed. I'm sure it's not perfect, but it's pretty cool that you can have this happen without you doing a lot of legwork. There is a small fee, $3 a month. The first month that is free for a trial, or you can pay $20 for the year. But I think if you rely on having that information, all your contact information up to date, something like this is absolutely invaluable.
Absolutely, especially since you can try it out. If after a month, it's not for you, then that's fine. But if you're the kind of person who's maybe not as organized as you'd like to be, or email is your primary means of communication and it's getting away from you and it's stressful, it's like, I will pay $3 a month to feel less stressed, 100%. If it indeed will help.
Yeah, so if anyone's using it, let us know. I'm going to definitely try it out and see how it works, because I just rely on Gmail so much. So I think it would be really handy. But it's funny, now I'm thinking that I have so many of these different tools plugged into my Gmail account. You know, I just started using the email game. So it's like a little game that inspires you to answer emails more quickly. I have Reportive. I've used Zobni in the past. Now this tool, you know, we're all trying to make our inboxes smarter, I think. I just need someone to answer them now, Sarah.
Yeah. And then I'm... I'll answer your email. Just don't send me that many. No, I'm just kidding. You and I, we communicate via email, but we're pretty good with our other tools as well. So there are certain people. I'll just go off on my email tangent very briefly, and then we'll move on. But I have certain friends who, and it drives me crazy. You know, we're both on IM all day long. Clearly, you know, we have Facebook Messenger. Because we're both, you know, we've got all of our tabs open. We're on Twitter. There's, of course, SMS. Or even if they have an iPhone and I have an iPhone, then you go to messages. So it's not even counting against your text messaging plan. But then they'll email me for weird stuff. And it's like, why did you just email me? You have so many other ways to easily and very casually get a hold of me. And they'll kind of go like, well, Sarah, what does it matter? And I'll go, because I get too much email.
I know. I feel the same way, you know. Or if someone emails you and they say, call me, that's my biggest pet peeve. Like, you just took the time to email me. Obviously, couldn't you just put that out in an email really nicely instead of calling me? But it's not a perfect system, Sarah. Not yet.
It is not a perfect system. Another thing that is not a perfect system is how to learn how to do things. Some of us are just born cooks. You know, you sort of eyeball what you have in your fridge and throw some herbs into there, and all of a sudden you've got this beautiful casserole for dinner type of thing. I'm not one of those people. I need to follow recipes. I need how-tos. I need somebody to kind of walk me through it, handheld. And that's why there is an app called SnapGuide that is our spotlight this week, and it's pretty neat. Now, I mentioned food because I'm a little food challenged, but I'm very interested in cooking food. But that's not all that SnapGuide's about. It's not a cooking app. It's a how to do things app. Now here I'm looking at it on my iPad. By the way, this is iOS only, at least right for now. So it's iPad and then iPhone. And I assume that they'd love to be on Android sooner than later. So we've got some food stuff here. This all looks pretty interesting. But then how to make a succulent composition. Now, it turns out that this is by Flora Grub Gardens. That is a nursery in San Francisco that I have been to. So, okay, This nursery is now participating with a company account. Let's see what they're gonna show to me. What you see here is sort of the homepage where it's like, this is the title of the how-to. This is a little bit of information about what it's about. It's got 145 likes, 8 comments. I can go ahead and share it, but I want to know a little bit more first of all. So what do I need? I need, in my supplies section, succulents, of course, a pot, some soil, trowel, decorative rocks, that sort of thing. Okay, if I had all of those things, it's almost like arranging, you know, it's a flower arrangement. It's like you can still have all the good stuff, and they look bad in the vase. So it goes through all of your steps. There's 1 out of 15 here, so I know I have 14 more pages. These look like they're all still videos, but you can embed a video if you want to as well. Oh, here we go. So we've got videos here where, you know, might show you, like, there might be a technique of how to transfer this plant that it doesn't really come through in a still image. So you've got a nice video type of a thing. Maybe I'm looking at this for the second time, or I know that I kind of know some of these parts and I want to jump to another part in the tutorial. I can go ahead and jump to step 12, for example. Okay, all right. Now, here's where I always go wrong. Let's review the steps from here. And that's it. This is the app. Of course, at the last page, when you're done with the app, you, again, have links to comments, links to share. And then if I was to say, all right, well, you know, nothing in SnapGuide is very cool as far as I'm concerned, which isn't true, but let's say I thought that. Well, what if I know how to make the most beautiful sandcastle in the world type of a thing. And it's just like, it's a technique that I don't need to hoard on my own, but I'm pretty sure that somebody needs my help on. I can go ahead and create my own guide. So it'll give you some quick categories. Is this about cooking? Is it about like cleaning something, entertaining type of a thing? So you can, there's some quick links to help you get started with your guide. I started to make one this morning, Amber, about the breakfast that I made, but then I realized it wasn't very good. And I don't know that I would want anyone to think that I was really proud of my egg and kale mess that I ate for breakfast this morning. But if I wanted to take a little bit of time, it is really neat. And once you explore for a little while, I would say the majority of the tutorials are food-based, but certainly not all of them. So this guy is making a whistle from elderwood, for goodness sakes. I don't even know if I want to know about that. But now I'm curious because he knows, and that's awesome.
In case you ever need a whistle, Sarah.
Exactly.
You never know. Never know. Very cool. That is awesome. Well, it looks like we have a couple of good links and questions to you as well in our viewer feedback, if you want to kick that off. The first one, I don't know, is this from Tom Merritt?
No, this is from a different Tom who watches our show. And he actually sent us a video of a service that he likes that I hadn't heard of before. So take it away, Tom.
Hi there. I found a program that allows you to keep copies of the files that you post on different social networks. It's called Social Folders. You download the application and it creates folders on your computer that it constantly monitors and copies the files down from your social networks. The free version allows for 3 services to connect to and 2,000 files, where the paid version, which is $10 a year, which is cheap, allows for unlimited everything. So that's Social Folders at socialfolders.me.
I love that. That is very cool.
Me too. Thank you, Tom. Hopefully you could hear him okay. He was down a little bit low, but it sounds like a perfect service, especially if you only use a few social networks. You never have to pay anything. But I think he said $10 a year if you want unlimited social networks, where you've got, you know, not just pictures, but pictures and videos and all sorts of stuff that you're scattering all over the web. That it's overwhelming sometimes when you think, well, gosh, you know, one day I'd have to download all of the stuff, but what a project that would be. I think it sounds like Social Folders is supposed to take a lot of that stress out of your life.
Yeah, I use, I think we've talked about this before, If This Then That, I think that's the name of the service. And I have used that before. Just for instance, anytime I post something to Instagram, I automatically make sure that that photo gets emailed to me just so I have a backup of it. But this seems like a much more integrated service and kind of a better way to navigate through all of the content that you've been posting online. So very cool. Thanks, Tom.
Absolutely. And we got an email from Captain Temerity, on Twitter as well. This is a very interesting email, and I want to read it out loud because I don't know what happened. Amber, you might know, and if Amber, you don't know, maybe somebody watching the show knows what's going on. He says, a couple weeks ago, my fiancé and I went to visit friends out of town to help them move into their new house. On our first night there, I decided to check in on Facebook. I created a new location for their house. I included my fiancé and, the two friends whose house it was. Over the next 2 days, I received messages from Facebook that three of my other friends checked in as well to this location. The accounts were a dog that had been set up by an owner, a great uncle, and an ex-girlfriend. Both of the people, though, who checked in had died within the last year. The dog account is, the dog's still alive. Now, he says, none of these accounts are interconnected to each other except by me. I don't think anybody would be running these accounts and actively checking them into places. Doesn't make sense, even within a couple hours of each other. Just really, really creeped me out, and I don't know why this would have happened. I'm trying not to get upset about the situation. I understand that sometimes after somebody passes away, account activity, you know, there can be some automation that, you know, can be a little disconcerting. But he says, I just don't know why this specifically would have happened with location. So I'm giving Facebook the benefit of the doubt. Can you think of any reason that this might have happened? Amber?
You know what, Sarah? I have read this email about three or four times since I saw it in the rundown for today's show, and I really cannot figure out what exactly is going on. Although I will say that my first inclination is to suggest that he contacts Facebook and tries to get some advice as far as what could be done. It just, I can't figure out a logical reason why it should be happening.
Me either. Anybody in... Chad is kind of going, well, you know, there's longitude and latitude coordinates in the picture. Well, that's true, but it wouldn't make sense. You don't check into Facebook passively. That's the thing. You check in. I mean, it's like me. I don't check in on Foursquare passively. I have to actively do it. So I don't know. Web 3023 saying auto check in on a phone. It still doesn't make sense why this would be happening by a third party, though.
So I have a suggestion.
Yes, go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, my only suggestion is I know that on Facebook you can actually check in other people to a place. So like if I wanted to check in at a airport and mm-hmm. my friend happened to be with me, I could check him in. The person who's running the dog account might actually have... via nostalgia's sake, checked in, you know, their deceased relatives to a location. I don't know, maybe they were cremated and they're still there, you know, maybe that sort of thing. And so nostalgia's sake, they checked them in, and maybe you're not seeing everyone who's checked into that location. It was just those three that actually got pushed to you because Facebook was curating all the updates that you're getting. But that's a fairly far-fetched analysis
well,
of that
yeah,
situation.
You're right, Chad. There are definitely, I have been checked into places by people where it's, I mean, it doesn't really bother me because I allow them to do that, but I'll be like, what? Oh yeah. 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 Okay. I did not check in myself, but you know, my friend, checked in when we went to brunch the other day and checked me in as well. It does seem, though, that for nostalgia purposes, if indeed that's what happened, you're probably going to be freaking people out a little bit more than your original intention. So you might want to think about that. Or maybe it's a mistake. On Facebook, quite often, I will be replying to somebody. And you know where you, if I'm trying to reply to Amber, maybe in a comment thread, and it's like A, M, B, Facebook will try to figure out who I'm trying to reply to. So if I am friends with five different Ambers and I'm not paying a lot of attention, it's possible that I could be checking somebody in or at replying them, and it's not the actual person I intended to be directly speaking to.
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, it's definitely a bit of a mystery, but hopefully they can keep us posted and let us know what went on, because I'm sure there's a lot of very curious people wondering about this, and maybe other people have had similar issues. Sorry, no good answers for you now, but maybe contacting Facebook is a good idea too, and just asking some of those questions. All right, Sarah, we have another email. And speaking of questions, there are a lot of questions that are stacked in this particular email from Jesse. It says, during this week's episode, I heard Sarah say that she doesn't have cable, and he's wondering why. Do you consume all of your favorite TV shows via iTunes Season Pass, or do you use some other form of media? Also, I heard Amber say she has an Android device, which I thought was odd, because don't most apps first launch on the iPhone? What made Amber opt for an Android? I guess I'll answer this first, Sarah, and then throw it back to you for your answers. As far as opting for an Android, I have been a BlackBerry user for a really long time. As many people know, RIM is headquartered in Canada, so I've always been super excited to support them. The reality is, though, the recent BlackBerry, the Torch, I went through about three of them, and it just the software was just pretty buggy, and it never worked well for me, and I had to get a new phone. Because I rely so much on Google services like Gmail and Calendar, I was never totally happy with the way that that was integrated into the iPhone, and I just wanted a better solution because my life is so Google-dependent. That sounds bad, but it's true, and my business too. So I found an Android phone just really lent itself to someone who relies on Google services so much. I will say, because being in the tech industry, and it's probably like many people out there, I also have an iPhone, the iPhone 4S. I have literally probably a dozen phones and tablets, and I have the Samsung Note and pretty much everything you can imagine as far as the latest technology. But I do use an Android phone as my primary device right now.
Well, I think that's a decent, sufficient answer. It's true that some apps do come to the iPhone first, but I feel like that's even changing already. Not only are they on both platforms, not that iOS and Android are the only two platforms, but the two most used, especially for apps. But you start seeing Android only apps that you go, oh, that's awesome, I can't wait till it comes to the iPhone type of thing. Of course, nothing's coming to mind right this second, but I have thought this before in the past, so I know it's true. To answer your question, Jesse, about why I don't have cable, the very, very short answer is it's too expensive, and I didn't watch the majority of the programs that were bundled into even the lowest cable subscription option. So yes, I do use iTunes Season Pass with shows that I can buy in a season. Mad Men, perfect example. It doesn't really even change my habits much, except that I don't get to watch it live when it first airs on AMC, but I do get to watch it pretty much at midnight that night when it goes up on iTunes. So that works really well for certain shows. I also subscribe to Hulu. I actually subscribe to Hulu Plus, so not only do I get more options, but I use my Hulu Plus app via my Roku box. So instead of just Hulu on my computer, I watch my big programs on my big TV in my living room. And it just has a few shows. It's $8 a month. It has a few shows that are worth it to me. Hulu Plus also has a lot of shows that I don't watch, I'm never going to watch. But that's certainly less than, $75 a month for the same idea. So, I've gotten pretty used to being a cord cutter. And I also have a little antenna to pick up over-the-air Wi-Fi signal, Wi-Fi signals, over-the-air HD signals that, so I can get NBC, Fox, ABC, PBS, that sort of thing too, from my living room. And that's actually even a nicer signal than what comes through cable. A lot of people don't realize that. It's the cleanest HD signal that you can get right now on TV. So it's not a perfect system, but it works for me. It's money saving and makes me feel good. Like I tried hard enough to get around the man.
All right, Sarah. So just quickly, before we tell people how they can get in touch with us, as for our tweet or meme of the week, obviously April Fool's Day just passed, a really big day in the internet world. I had a bad taste in my mouth from the very beginning of yesterday because I had opened up my email and I saw that Bob Lefsetz, who I love, he writes the Lefsetz letter about the music industry, had written for his email newsletter this long email about quitting, and he was going to work for a hedge fund manager. And I was kind of sleepy when I read it, and I was all disappointed because I love him. him. And then I kicked myself because I realized it was April 1st and the day continued on like that. And I got more frustrated. Nonetheless, a lot of different tech companies and media outlets doing April Fool's Day jokes. NPR had a really funny list that they posted about some of the April Fool's Day headlines that came out of their office. The one that won was tweets will shrink to 133 characters. And the list of funny headlines go on and on, like Facebook ads meh button, which I wish they kind of would. Facebook ad lets your friends see your tax returns. And the list of funny headlines goes on and on. So no, we don't want to beat April Fool's Day to death. I'm a little sick of it. But I think the NPR list is kind of fun.
It is. It is fun. I actually... I read a few April Fool's headlines yesterday. They all were very obviously April Fool's jokes. In general, I think the whole thing is sort of silly because it's like, it seems to have gotten away from, some of it is not even really designed to trick anybody. It's just supposed to be funny because it's like, hey, we know that you're going to know that this is a joke, so we're going to just make it funny. And that's fine if it is indeed funny. There are a lot of just kind of like, fake products, you know, that a company will say, look, we're going to make this new thing. And it's very clearly not happening. But it's also not really that funny. Or maybe I'm just a humorless person. And a lot of the ha-ha is lost on me. But I did like this NPR. Just let's look over some of the silly headlines. I liked one of them. Now I'm not going to remember. Let me open it up. By the way, NPR had they did a little joke of their own, which probably a lot of people did not find funny, but I did, where the NPR Instagram account was taken over by cats for a day. And that, I was totally into that. That was great. Oh, more teens going Amish, shunning technology. That was one of the headlines that I liked a lot, which is sort of like the going Amish part of it is, the ha-ha, because it's just because you shun technology does not mean that you've become an Amish person, but... I like the idea that like teens are saying, no, our parents are all using Facebook now. Now we don't want to anymore. Tech sucks.
I know. Yeah, they had lots of goodies. So a great list. All right. So we got lots of feedback this week, Sarah, and really easy if you guys want to send us even more feedback or videos or emails. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL or record a video. Just make sure that it is 30 seconds or less and that you record it safely. So lots of ways to get in touch with us and let us know what you think. We've talked about a ton of different issues on the show, so I'm sure there's something that has resonated with you.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got Facebook mysteries. We showed off a lot of different apps and services. We had a nice little TV debate going on during our MISO interview at the top of the show. So let us know if you got questions, comments, all that good stuff. We are here for you. All right, let's move on to the part of the show that you've all been waiting for, and that is Rad or Fad.
Rad or Fad. Now, you can also send us an idea for Rad or Fad, which is exactly what happened this past week. Laura Killian, who's my co-host on Command End, sent this email. I know she's a fan of the show. And she said she was just reading about something called the Wrap app, WRAPP, which lets you send gift cards to Facebook friends and had hugely successful pilot test in Sweden. Yay, Sweden. What do you think, Rad or Fad? Now, I was digging into the Wrap app a little bit. It's not yet available in many countries. However, it is available in Sweden and a couple of other places right now. The idea being that this is a really simple way for you to send gift cards to your friends on Facebook. And I have to say, this is something that I think I would use because I'm one of those people who sometimes, I don't want to say I forget my friends' birthdays, but you know, there's baby showers and birthdays and all of that stuff happening. And I'd love a really simple way to send a gift card. So I think it's kind of rad whenever it gets to this part of the world.
I don't know. I mean, when I hear virtual gift cards on Facebook, I think, ugh, sounds spammy. Now, that doesn't mean that it is. I'm sure that Wrap, which is WRAPP, by the way, two Ps, they have thought about the fact that people might be turned off by something that's just, you know, littered all over people's Facebook walls. So I'm sure that they're figuring out how to not have that sort of association. But, I mean, Amber, if you were going to send me a gift card, is that really the way that you would do it?
I just don't know any other way to do it. Like, you know, when I think of gift cards right now, right? The most regularly what I would do is I would go out and physically have to buy a gift card, right? For the most part. And I just think it's a simple way to be able to bypass that to some of the, if there were some great retailers attached to this, right? Like let's say Toys R Us, you know, offered this option through Wrap, right? And it was really simple for me to send a $50 gift card. I probably would send them more, and maybe that just makes me lazy. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If it's about people, I mean, being nice with each other. Somebody in chat said, well, what about like an Apple card, for example? That's true. I think if Facebook is just the means for Amber to send me a gift card, let's say, and that's actually something that I can redeem somewhere, you know, for actual real goods, that type of a thing. Facebook is a perfect means to give it to me because I'm on Facebook. And it doesn't necessarily have to be some splashy thing, you know, like animated GIF type of a thing that other people are going to see it and go, oh, block this app. I don't like this type of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll be optimistic about this. I'll say that it's rad. It is Swedish, after all.
Swedish. That just makes it rad in itself, right? But yeah, so it has not launched here yet. So I'm looking at some of the countries. It looks like it is coming to the US and Canada and the UK fairly soon. So we'll have to try it out. But I do like the idea, you know, just to kind of promoting generosity, I guess, in some way, assuming that it isn't too spammy and it's not too tacky, right? Sarah, like the execution of it, I think maybe that's more of the issue to make sure it's streamlined and just a nice sort of professional way to send a nice gift card to someone you care about.
Yeah. All right, Rap. You've got a rad pass. And thanks also to Laura Killian for sending in this suggestion. And she has sent in something in the past too. So thank you, Amber's friend. Hopefully we can all meet one day in person. I haven't even met Amber yet. So, I mean, I don't know when that's going to happen, but I'm holding out hope.
I don't know if it's a good idea anymore that we meet Sarah. I'm starting to think that this is working so well that we meet, we might, you know, who knows what would happen.
Let's not push it. Let's not force it. Totally agree with you. Well, which is good because you're so far, it's not going to happen anytime soon, but I actually really do want to meet you at some point in our lives. But for now, that is it for this episode of The Social Hour. Remember that we are live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. It's a lot of fun to watch live. You can participate in chat, or you can just watch our live stream. That's all good. But if you can't watch us live, you know where to go, twit.tv/TSH. That's where all of our links, all of our videos, all of our everything, our biographies, the whole thing is there. So you don't actually have to miss anything if you can't join us while we're live. We're on iTunes as well. You just search for The Social Hour. You have a small video feed, a larger one, which is better for, you know, big TVs, and then an audio feed as well. If you're into that whole audiobook thing, you want to listen to us, but you don't necessarily have time to watch, that's cool too. We give you options. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching. We'll see you soon.